This is a Momentum Media production.
Investing insights with Right Property Group, exploring trends in real estate and helping property investors gain financial security.
Hi, good everyone. How are you going? It's Phil Tarrant, co-host of Investing Insights with the Right Property Group. Hope you're well. Joined in the studio by Steve Waters, Victor Kumar, directors, Right Property Group. Gents, we've been doing this for a few years now, and it's funny how often the narrative comes back to repeat. Even, I think, 6 years we've been doing this, 6 years on, same themes, same logic, same principles, same strategies, largely same everything, irrespective of a changing market. And I guess it gives sense to what property investors should be knowing and should be embracing, is that you've got to stick to your knitting when it comes to property investment. You've got to ensure that you get the basics right. You get the basics right, it gives you agility, fluid movements to move forward and keep investing in property, which I think we've all done as property investors. How are you guys going? You well?
Going well, mate. Yeah, that was a pretty sound introduction.
Yeah, something's changed, hasn't it?
It has. Is it because you're in control of the buttons today?
I am. This is it. You know, it's
Does that mean you're good at pushing buttons?
I am. I'm pretty good at pressing your buttons. You know that, Victor. Property buttons. What are they? Cash flow and capital growth, right? The buttons to press.
That's it.
In fact, back to basics. It's pretty simple. Yep.
If we went back to all of our podcasts and we took away, you know, the messages from each of them, there would be a whole new podcast that would be conversant with any market out there, right? Because the fundamentals don't actually change. It's how those fundamentals are then morphed to fit the current market. That's what changes.
It's a good point. I think the fundamentals don't change, but the execution does.
Yes.
Yeah, it's basically, it's what you do about it. Tactically, may change depending on the market, but the strategy and the what around it largely should be consistent. And I challenge anyone to find a moment in time in property over the last 6 years and not being able to pull a episode of Investing Insights for the Right Property Group off the shelf and find relevance in it, because it would be there without doubt.
We'd like to think so.
Yeah, maybe that's someone's job to go and do that. Try and find out what we've missed. Is there anything we haven't covered over this period, do you think, guys? What haven't we really got stuck into? I know you've been itching to talk about all the benefits off the plan purchases, Steve, and me and Vic have not allowed you to do so. But
yeah, every time.
Outside of that.
Yeah, I know, I get vetoed. I'm sure if someone had the time and the bandwidth to go through all our episodes, they'd find something that we've missed, or maybe even we got it a little wrong.
Oh, I'm sure we did. Yeah. I'm sure you guys did. I'm just a humble journalist trying to navigate and extract information out of you guys. But
yeah,
you don't always get it right in property. That's okay. You know, we've all got properties in our portfolio that wish we didn't have. It's only when you sort of go through the motion of owning them for a while you work that out, or you bought the wrong things at the wrong time. I've sort of expressed my sort of areas where I could have improved over a decade of property investing, where I still don't get it right. My administration's still a bit lackadaisical. Got to do more on it, and my interest rates are probably more than what they should be, and maybe the rents that I'm getting should be higher than what they are. It's just the realities of investing. Don't always get it right.
Your rents should be higher than what they are. Sorry, I thought you meant they were too high. I was going to say, come on, Uncle Scrooge. That's not the Phil Tarrant I know.
No, mate, I like my market. I like my rents to be at market level, because that's fair and reasonable. But often there's a lag between where the market is and where my rents are. So I've been getting stuck in it. You guys do it better than me, though, I think. You guys, the plumbers with the leaky pipes, you're doing great work for other people, aka other property investors, but you don't always do it as good yourselves.
100%. And I would challenge anybody that does what we do be any different. There's always something that we can improve on. And you mentioned administration. Whilst it's such an important part of the, I guess, the asset class, because it holds you accountable, you know where you are. That's probably my weak point. It's up to date, but it could be better because it's so laborious, right? There's not an instant output or result for you. It's just a tracking mechanism, obviously. Mm. But having said that, and because it is so laborious, we are hopefully in the next 4 to 5 months there'll be some big news in and around that. We're just in the middle of creation. So stay tuned. It'll be very exciting.
Oh, what's this? Something.
Something. It's a need to know.
Need to know. All right.
Well, actually, you do know.
Oh, do I? Okay. That's cool.
We've talked about it over lunch with others.
Okay. Well, interesting. Nice to know. But so this is the point, this inflection point, I think, that we're at with property investment. We were recording this in April, and we are conscious that Reserve Bank has put a pause on the upwards rate cycle. There are a lot of economists who are now saying that's the end. There shouldn't be any more. You see inflationary pressures are starting to come back in the US. And I think that the sentiment was that should be the end of it here in Australia. Running sort of converse to that is jobs data that come out this month is a lot stronger than what everyone expected. So again, there's a question mark on whether or not I have another crack at pushing rates up. You know, are we at terminal rates? And I think this is what everyone's sort of struggling with the concept of right now, because once we are at that point and everyone has the realization that it's not going up any further is when mindsets and attitudes change. And that obviously has impacts and ramifications on what happens to property prices. Where are you guys at with the rate cycle, Vic? We're at the end?
I'm not sure. And again, no one can predict the future, right? If you look at everything out there, it seems, and this is my opinion, that maybe we should have had one more rate rise to just put the put it on hold. But as soon as they put a pause on it, talking to all the real estate agents, their phones have been ringing hot, right? Because there seems to be a degree of certainty in the market now. And people thrive on certainty. And so they've been sitting on the sidelines. And now that there's a little bit of supposed certainty in the market, they're jumping back in. And we already have a undersupply issue in terms of, if you look at listings from this time last year, we're down by 21%, right? So when more players are jumping in looking for properties, automatically pushes the prices up. And we're starting to see that in a lot of listings where the prices achieved are above the listed price, or they're going to best offers or even auction results where they're hundreds of thousands of dollars above the reserve mark.
It's interesting because the MO of the typical investor is to wait and see a result before they jump in, right? It's and we talked about this a few podcasts ago around when the majority think that we have reached terminal cash rate, it'll be that trigger point for them to show a lot more, I guess, inquiry and potentially activate. And as you mentioned, Vic, since the pause earlier this month, every agent we have spoken to has had a substantial increase in the level of inquiry for purchasing. Conversely, or more perhaps interestingly, what's also happened is that the amount of market appraisals and therefore CMAs, comparative market analysis, a tool that real estate agents use when they go to list a property for sale or do a presentation to a potential vendor or seller, they've seen a slight decrease in that, which will then flow on to stock on market decreasing as well. Because what the consensus is from the potential seller is, well, we're starting to see all the media change their opinion over the last 4 to 6 weeks around bottom of the market, slight increases in, say, Sydney and Melbourne and Brisbane and Adelaide and Perth and what have you. Now we've reached this potential, end of the rate cycle, which is, you know, yet to be proved. They're saying, well, market's up, consumer confidence is up, which is another data point from Westpac last week. Maybe I'll hold off selling because the market is starting to improve. And as it improves, obviously more money in my pocket as a seller. And so there may be very well the case, which we mentioned in last week's podcast, around less stock on market over the coming month or thereabouts as confidence improves. And we also mentioned on last week's podcast, Vic, that the agents, and we're certainly seeing it on the ground in terms of competition, there is the smallest element of FOMO starting to creep into the market. Now, not to the point of during COVID where, you know, you could sell a Portaloo on your front yard for $1 million, but just a slight amount of, well, you know, I don't want to miss out. And that could be a combination of, well, my finance is running out and I probably won't get the same pre-approved amount, so I'm going to spend it because I know what's just around the corner as a purchaser. And so the inquiry levels in combination with attendances, in combination with the media narrative, has just put that little bit of FOMO in the market. Now, I don't want to blow that out of proportion. It's not crazy, silly FOMO, but there's certainly an element of it there. Not all markets, but certainly some.
I agree. And this is where, you know, we as human beings, we need some social proof, right? And the social proof we've got is through COVID, where property was just skyrocketed in value. And when they're starting to see the scarcity factor starting to come in, whether it is real or perceived, they are jumping in, making sure that, hang on, I really want to be part of this journey this time around. Maybe I missed out during COVID. Maybe I was scared. I didn't have the right information in front of me. So they're jumping in. And it does become a self-perpetuating scenario where there would be a whole lot of people that have missed out during the COVID inverted commas boom that will jump in now expecting the same result. And like we said earlier, really, when you're looking at the change in the market and how the cycle is changing, the fundamentals remain the same, but we still need to adjust our approach to those fundamentals.
This goes back
and that's all part of the execution, right?
Back to execution, and the best property investors I know are those that flawless execution. They execute the right way every single time, and by doing that, they typically don't reinvent what they do each time. They just do the same thing over and over and over and over and over and over and over again. And they get very good at ironing out all the cracks and the creaks within that. So it's a smooth, seamless, predictable process that just gives continuity to their sort of success as property investors. I know a lot of them are eyeing this market right now, sort of sitting there thinking, okay, here we go. It's time to go again. We spoke by memory last year or maybe the year before, gents, around this notion of whether your portfolio was agile or fragile. So, you know, that being of the idea is that you're there, you're engaged, you're connected, you've got the ability to maneuver with pace and with confidence. And that's what I'm talking to there, those people who execute well all the time. The flip side of that is fragile portfolio. So those that may lack liquidity, those that might be the wrong assets in the wrong place as you look at this particular market. So there's this dichotomy that a lot of people are trying to embrace at the moment to look at whether or not they've got to sell down or shape their portfolio so they can actually have an agile portfolio and accelerate into this market. But it all comes back to this notion, guys, and everyone asks me, for some reason people think I know about property, and I'm quick to tell them I don't. I just say I know a lot of people that do know a lot about property, so I get the benefits of asking them questions and picking, which is a real privilege for me, to be fair. Like, I can pick up the phone and speak to anyone in Australia around property and get the inside word. My goal is to try and share that with as many people as possible on this podcast and other podcasts like the Smart Property Investment Show. But still keeps coming back to this same point, guys, where people are going, has the market actually turned? They're going, has it turned, Phil? Has it turned? And, you know, my response to them is, well, maybe there's more pain ahead. Who knows? Mm-hmm. So that's what everyone's trying to extrapolate information around at the moment so they can actually move ahead with confidence, so they can execute. Those people with agile portfolios, they can get stuck in. But, you know, we all know that it's impossible to pick the bottom of a market. You only know a bottom of a market when it's passed, and normally a couple of months, 3 months, 6 months down the future. So, you know, and largely it becomes irrelevant. If you can go, if you can invest, timing is important, but if you miss it by a couple of months, who really cares? Doesn't matter that much. But, you know, the question I pose to both of you, sort of individually and collectively, because you read off a very similar hymn sheet, but you've got your own sort of views on the world. Has the market turned? Have we moved from a market which you could identify as softening, as in the prices have come back universally across Australia since before the interest rates at the start of May last year? So has it turned, or are we still languishing in a very challenging market? Victor, you're first, mate.
So if you look at how this has all panned out, right, the exuberance in the market is definitely gone. So as the interest rates started increases started to come in, people sat back and took notice. A lot of investors actually hadn't seen an interest rate rise before, especially if they've just invested in this cycle. And when you really look at it, if you take away the exuberance in the market, so this was the silly money in the market where the interest rate that people were paying were phenomenally low, and so therefore everything was affordable. When you take that away and a bit of normalcy is starting to now creep in terms of the interest rates that are being charged by the banks now, it's settled back into its own rhythm, right? But there is another play over here, which is where people are chasing yield because they're starting to see an inverted commas higher interest rate. And they are now starting to focus on just the yield rather than the full fundamentals of the property. you know, looking at all of the foundational aspects of property. So a lot of the uninformed and perhaps poorly informed investors that will buy and at this point in the cycle where there's all these conflicting signals, you know, some markets going up, some markets going down, then you hear the news of properties going way above listed price. Once they've bought, they might have bought purely on the yield scenario and not necessarily the growth, taking the full growth factor or the liquidity of the property into play. And these are generally your people that would have to then sell down because they haven't really seen a result in a couple of years' time, right? Because they're not understanding that growth in itself, it cannot be linear, right? It's got its ups and downs. And we need to understand with each state what the general cycle is from the bottom of the market to the peak. So as an example, Sydney would be 3 to 5 years, Melbourne 3 to 7 years, and generally Brisbane being 7 to 11 years, right? When we throw in COVID factors in there in terms of how it's changed our demography, how it's changed the way we work, how it's changed where we live, those normal patterns might get disrupted in the immediate future. So if we're just focusing on, hang on, if I just get the timing just a little bit off, I'll be okay in Sydney, I'll be okay in Melbourne because they have shorter time, shorter cycles in comparison to, say, Brisbane as an example. You are really asking for trouble because then you're starting to stray away from also evaluating the property that you're buying and how it fits into the portfolio, how it fits into the greater cycle. And that way, really, if you've addressed those things, it doesn't really matter at what point in the cycle you're buying this property because you're looking at a medium to long-term approach.
Mm. It's interesting. I think it's a really good point in and around how patterns have changed. And once again, I bring technology into it and sort of availability of education and information. Those patterns were potentially extrapolated over a period of time, as opposed to now with quick information, good education, hopefully, we'll see those patterns, I believe, change completely. And, you know, throw in a COVID, throw in today's environment and the stage is set for those changing patterns. However, once again, going back to the fundamentals very briefly, more often than not, they don't change. Potentially the fundamentals for an area may, but the general philosophy doesn't. Have we seen the last of the pain? Has the market turned? I think it's going to depend on which area that you're looking at and what measurement of time you're giving it. And what I really mean by that is that there are some markets that have definitely had a, I guess we'll call it a bounce over the last 4 to 8 weeks, you know, whether it be 1.4% or a couple of percent, whatever the measurement is.
Well, Sydney as a collective has gone up for the last three months running.
Yeah.
And I think it was a point of a percent, I think 0.8. 0.9 and maybe, I think altogether it was 1 point something over the quarter, right?
Yeah. So now that you bring Sydney up, let's use that as an example. So I think we've got to be very careful that we don't buy into the general media narrative where, well, first of all, the Australian market is measured by what Melbourne and Sydney do. Like it's a flaw. You shouldn't do that. The media does that. But if we take Sydney as an example, and even Sydney collectively has gone up, you know, whatever it may be, 1.4% and above, we need to, as sophisticated investors, actually dissect the greater Sydney market. And we're only using this as an example because you brought it up. Collectively, Sydney market has gone up, but there are certain areas of Sydney which haven't. And there are certain areas of Sydney which has done a lot better than a couple of percent growth over the last couple of months, a lot better. And that will drag the averages up and, I guess, give you that very general story. But if we look to the future, once again, talking about Sydney, now knowing that as a region it's gone up, what does the future hold for it and is there more pain to come? The short answer on that, I believe, is it depends. And it depends on whether we have reached terminal cash rate or not. Yeah, the jury's out. Yeah, wouldn't surprise me if we got another rate rise. It wouldn't surprise me if we held, and it wouldn't surprise me if we, you know, had a reduction in the cash rate over the next, you know, 4 to 6 months. But I'm pretty confident that Sydney will be a very mixed bag. Once again, just using Sydney as an example. There will be areas that I believe will continue to do well, irrespective of what the cash rate does, as long as we don't get this huge increase, you know, with another 6 or 7 rate rises.
I don't think anyone's pricing that in, right? I think sort of bond markets and those really smart people that work out what the future looks like are sort of pricing in reductions.
Well, those smart people that said there'd be no...
There wouldn't be a rate rise until 2024.
Those smart people that said at the beginning of COVID that the entire real estate market would crash, those smart people that said, we won't get any rate rises over and above X. Like, and I guess that's part of the point, right? And Victor touched on it earlier on. I don't think anybody would bet their life on making a prediction of the future in and around the financial ecosystem.
Yeah, I sort of know, and it's sort of quite considered, Steve, because the banks who essentially the rules for the banks are set by APRA, the prudential regulator. And if you want a clue to what might sort of happen in the future, APRA hasn't reduced the buffers on mortgage lending. So people are still sort of putting 3% on top of their interest rate in terms of serviceability. So, you know, no doubt I think that's in preparation for when rates do start coming down, that buffer is still in place moving forward. So, you know, it's very difficult to make decisions around your property investment viewing interest rates in isolation. And I'll take the point from you guys that some markets potentially have turned. There are also markets where there are probably still quite a lot of pain ahead. And pain ahead, by that, we probably should define that. I imagine you're saying there's going to be reductions to values in those
correct areas. Yeah, correct. But I think we're also putting too much emphasis on the cost of money and which is a fair point, but we're not putting enough emphasis on how fluid the financial environment is, how easy it is to get credit, because you actually need both.
Right? You need, and that's just liquidity, and that sort of determines correct. All investments. And liquidity is a funny thing. It floats around. It's always there. It's just where it seems to get channeled. And, you know, a lot of liquidity was pumped into tech stocks over the last few years. A lot of that liquidity has now come out.
Correct.
And that's going to other asset classes. Property normally is quite attractive to liquidity. They're good bedfellows. Liquidity and residential property investment, because that's sort of the mainstay of Australia's banking system, is access to mortgages to drive, and it's synonymous with Australian.
Well, it's a flight to safety.
Flight to safety. So,
and it's a good hedge against inflation. Yeah. But just very quickly coming back to Sydney, I think there's going to be a pinch point. Well, I mentioned that I think some sectors will do well, but I also believe there'll be some sectors that do very, very poorly. And that'll be in and around certain parts of the greater Sydney basin at a certain price bracket.
Yeah.
And probably in and around the people that may be the first homeowners that have paid at the upper echelon of what their affordability was at 1.99%.
Yeah.
Loaded up on cars, holidays.
So on that basis, then you could probably draw some bubbles around Sydney about where that sort of stuff is. So are you talking, just to be a bit more specific, sort of more green fields, new development type stuff in the fringes of the city?
Not necessarily, although it's a good point, because we have to take into account just how undersupplied we are. And so if there is a rush of development, should that part of the ecosystem free up?
But they're saying they need more of it, right? We're not developing enough stuff as there is, so that should help.
Correct. So it'll absorb. It'll be more around affordability.
Yeah.
And, those that just literally can't afford what they have, as well as the cost of living.
Yeah. It's hard for people to change their cost of living, right? If you've got a couple of
when you're locked
cars
in,
on leases, if you've got, you know, if you're up to your eyeballs in mortgage debt, something's got to give, right? And what that manifests itself in is a lot of unhappy people, which isn't good.
Correct.
And unhappy people who are financially stressed in relationships often leads to, you know, divorce and everything connected in with it. So these, and no doubt the Reserve Bank of Australia and regulators are very conscious about this, that the health and happiness and connectivity of of all Australians, a lot of it is inherently connected with their ability to feel wealthy or at least meet their financial commitment.
Which is connected to their asset base being their home.
Absolutely. Right? And that's just the Australian way, Vic.
Well, it's the wealth effect. Sorry, yeah. just one other thing, Vic. Vic, that would be not you. You'd be Phil. I think over the short term, there's going to be quite a lot of masking. And what I mean by that is the medium term will probably yield the truth. And what I mean about that is that because of our undersupply and the construction issues that we continually have, that very low vacancy rate will temporarily mask what will be an underperforming asset over the medium to long term.
But that's okay. And that's the reality. It's just actually understanding what are those underperforming assets which are still performing okay, even though they should be underperforming, which is a structural
issue. On how long you're going to hold them.
Well, exactly. But it's a structural issue, right? Because I can't see – we've seen a spate of builders going bust just this week, right? Like, you know, there's not going to be enough builders to build the housing that needs to get built. There's still the issues around red tape and regulation to get developments through. It's still a massive headache. You've got this influx of migration, which is now starting to kickstart, which is going to put a lot of pressure on rents in some of the areas that we're probably talking about right now. So that's not going to get fixed in any point soon, if not ever. But I think the complexity of those issues are going to be prevalent for the next 3 to 5 years before something tangibly happens to start changing and shaping that. So the point being, those underperforming assets will continue to probably perform okay purely because of that dynamic. Now, Victor, correct. I guess the gold is how you actually get really good performing assets that also capitalize on that same environment. And that's what I'd be chasing as a property investor.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the trends that has started to emerge over the last couple of years is this reliance on desktop data, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm going to quote a really specific example to highlight that as to how dangerous that can be. Nothing wrong with using data, but you need to correlate it to what's actually happening on the ground, right? So earlier on, Steve mentioned that we've got a lot of vendors out there that are saying, you know what, I'll hold on to my property a little bit longer. I won't take the first price that comes my way. I'm going to hold out to what I want on my property. Now, one of the flow on of that is it impacts what a lot of people use as metrics to see whether the market is cooling or going up or down is the days on market. And generally what you'll find is that because the vendors know that they can actually get the price that they want, the property is now sticking on the market for say 2, 3, 4, 5 weeks longer for them to reach that, for the market to come and meet up what they wanted as a price. And so correspondingly, the days on market blows out. And if you are just investing, we're talking fundamentals, right? So if we're just investing with pure desktop data and not correlating what's actually happening on the ground, not understanding that there's a supply and demand issue, there's 21% less listings at the moment, and there's a little bit of certainty coming in the market. As soon as we start just straying away from that correlation of data onto the ground, we are going to end up with properties that are actually not good fundamental properties. And that's the biggest issue that I see facing most of the first-time investors and seasoned investors, if they're not really taking the time to correlate what's actually happening on the ground and then taking that, shining that light on the data that's being collected on desktop and saying, okay, well, you know what, I'm shining this light here. Here's the filter to what this data should be seen under. And therefore, that's the flow on. And therefore, this is the area I need to invest in. This is the type of property I need to buy.
So for many people, then, it must be this realization that we're in the normal property market. And that's
pretty much we are. Yeah, we are. Yeah. We're starting to get back to normalcy.
Yeah, it's not a buyer's market. It's not a seller's market. It's just a market, as I think we did a podcast on that too, 4 to 5 months ago or thereabouts. And
yeah, I think we called that, didn't we? We said it's nobody's market. And it's still sort of nobody's market. I reckon it's the bank's market because they're making a few more bucks in interest repayments on their money that they've lent out to Aussie investors. Maybe it's the bank's market, the lender's market.
Yeah, but I guess coming back to the question, is there going to be more pain or have we turned? I think, well, once again, depends. In isolation.
So have we? You have an answer.
There's going to be many. There's going to be. I think some markets had no corner to turn, if that makes sense.
Good point.
They've just continued. But I also believe.
Can you give me an example?
I think parts of Perth, parts of Brisbane. Like, Brisbane's a really good example where the data showed us that it had retracted in value as a very general statement, but there were areas that did not go back 1 cent.
I was surprised just the other day. I was looking up a property that you skewered for us some time ago in Kingston in Brisbane, and it was worth a lot more than I thought. You know, I hadn't looked at it for a couple of years, what the price point, and I was like, I was surprised. Then I said, no, it can't be worth that. And I looked at sort of the valuations on some of the property platforms, but then I went and looked at sort of post, you know, recent sales, and yeah, it's about right. And I was like,
so once again, you've got to be very careful.
So that hasn't turned, It's just done what it's done.
Yeah. I mean, there's obviously examples in isolation as well. If something was under power lines, flood affected, or what have you, well, then yeah, they've suffered.
Yeah.
But, you know, good properties in certain parts of Brisbane come out to that, but have not stepped back at all. And you would probably find examples of that in Sydney if you really looked hard enough as well. But has the market turned? Some areas, yes. Will it continue to turn? I believe so, because there's such a pent-up demand. But I also believe there will be across the country in some localities pain to come. Not like blood on the street pain, but enough pain within the localized markets to put a bit of pressure, I guess, downward pressure on it.
So, you know, embracing this idea that we're in a normal market, and in a normal market you have good properties, you have properties that go sideways, and you have properties that suffer, i.e. they go backwards in value. Vic, where are the good ones? Where are the good ones?
And this is the million-dollar question, right?
Where it's what everyone asks you, no doubt, every day. I get there's good ones, there's okay ones, and there's bad ones. I just want the good ones. Yep. It sounds like me.
One of the things that when people meet me, right, and they realize what I do, and they say, oh, so, you know, where's a good place to buy?
Yeah.
Right? And that's the wrong question, right? It's the wrong question to ask, because the quality of your question determines the quality of the answer, right? So really what you need to know first is, what does your portfolio, what does your financial situation need? And then that creates that subset, and you look at within that subset to say, where's the best place to buy based on cash flow, based on the equity growth, based on my deposits available, based on what's happening in life, right? So it's not a one size fits all. And this is where a lot of people do make mistakes, is they invest via media or invest via the barbecue. In other words, someone's bought in Perth, so they're going to jump in and start buying in Perth without understanding the cycles there, without understanding the nuances of property ownership in Perth, or someone just jumping in and buying a property in Sydney. It needs to really come back to, what are you really trying to achieve? Are you just buying for the sake of buying because it's the in thing to do? Or are you really buying towards an end result? And once you've sorted that end result buying, it'll sort out where you're going to buy, because the property is just the vehicle, right? Really, what we're really investing in is the leverage of finance. And if we can get that leverage of finance and be able to hold on to that leverage without impacting lifestyle, everything happens in the background.
I think it's, just to go on for that a little further, I think it's the question that your barbecue mate should be asked, or he should be asking, is, this is what I can afford. So the question is, what can I afford? Because not everybody's going to afford Point Piper or Kirribilli of Sydney, as an example. Yeah, they may only afford Bourke or Walker or whatever it may be.
Walker, one of the great suburbs of Australia, Steve.
So is Bourke, let me tell you.
Yeah.
It's one of the best places on this earth.
I detect a hint of bias there, Steve.
Massive amounts. But
you can still pick up an acre out there for about $300.
If you could buy it by the acre, you could probably pick it up for $40 an acre, but you just need to buy about 100,000 of them.
Yeah.
It's a job lot. But it's the affordability, which I guess for me, the markets that will do well, if the credit environment stays the way it is, and that's a combination of lack of credit and the cost of money, the areas that will do well will be those that are affordable in majority. From a rent point of view, because there will be a ceiling on what people can naturally afford to pay rent, but also affordability to the purchasers.
Good question.
Where is the majority?
Yeah, and this comes back to the cost of living. So there will be a natural threshold on the third of Australians who rent, how much they can actually afford to rent. And that will be, that'll be a natural occurrence that that is or is taking place right now. How much more growth there is in rents, who knows? A lot of it's going to be dictated by property market performance. Now, you know, I've known you guys a lot, and you always talk about you get this cycle of rising rates ahead of tighter property markets, and then when property starts to move again in price, the yields start coming down, you get more people buying. This is this cyclical thing. Are you seeing in the clients that you're working with, people with more than one job? Because everyone's talking about now to combat the cost of living, there's two and three jobs in there. Are you guys seeing that, or is it?
Oh, what a good question. In terms of our clients.
Yeah, yeah.
I'd probably
say. I'm just trying to get a sense of how prevalent it
yeah.
is.
Yeah. The short answer is no. Mm. I don't know of any. However, those that do have a second stream of income was a side hustle that they created during the lockdown of COVID. When we were locked down, and they were bored, they had time in their hands and everything else that goes along with that, and they created these other businesses. Mm. So revenue streams, yes. Jobs, secondary jobs, PAYG.
Yeah. So they're not sort of working at 7-Eleven on the weekends sort of stuff.
No, not unless they already were. I guess one or two come to mind where they, in the beginning of their investing sort of journey, so to speak, and they were very, very young, they were working three and four jobs just to accumulate enough capital and serviceability.
And that's what I expect to see with younger investors, and I know a lot of them tune into this particular podcast. You know, when you're younger and you've got time, you've got energy, you've got bandwidth, and you have less responsibilities, you should be working your guts out doing three jobs if you want to invest in property. If you can augment or complement your main sort of 9-to-5 job with a couple of nighttime jobs and weekend jobs, whether it's sort of new economy jobs like driving Uber or old economy jobs like working in retail, they're the young investors getting out there, and they're the ones who are creating good portfolios from the get-go, who are moving into this normal market. And I think, Vic, the market's probably going to be, inverted commas, normal for a period of time. I can't see who thought COVID was going to happen, right? So you could never know what normal is. But
yeah, it is one
there's
of
no
the,
significant
one
of the headwinds we, there.
Yeah, one of the things that we keep saying is the market's really between your ears, right? And and so, you know, it'll be whatever you think it'll be for you.
Mm. I think it's an interesting time. Like, I know we and a lot of other of our peers have said the same thing, that we've never seen these ingredients all together at one time.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is an exciting time in a very general sense. It won't be for everybody. But going back to your point earlier, Phil, around being fragile or agile, we could break that down into just, I don't know, points of liquidity and those that have prepared themselves for this moment in time to be able to act, and those that didn't. And I would probably argue that those that didn't, whether they have a property or 10 or none, I think if you polled basically the whole of Australia, the majority would agree on what's around the corner in terms of the market. But whether they do something about it or not is going to be yet to be seen.
Well, they're the people who are probably sitting at home listening to this, or driving in a car, or sitting on their ride-on lawnmower at the gymnasium, wherever people listen to podcasts. It's scratching their head going, oh, well, yeah, it all makes sense. I better do something about it right now.
A ride-on lawnmower at the gym, you're probably at the wrong
place. Either or. You know, I don't know, maybe. Vic, what do people do about this if they want to stress test this, see whether or not they've got an agile or fragile portfolio, whether or not they want to invest in a normal market? Can they speak to you guys?
Yeah, absolutely. And you do get to speak with us directly, myself and Steve. There is a little bit of a process. So once you hit the contact me button on our website, you speak with Melissa, who's a very seasoned property investor. She's seen many cycles. And her role is to get you ready with the right questions, so that when you do have the conversation with either myself or Steve, you're coming in armed with all of the right information. We've got a bit of a background on you, and we can then guide you as to whether this cycle, this conflicting market is for you, or whether you should really sit this one out.
Okay. Well, go and do that. Go and check in with the guys. You'll find them on the Facebook, on the interweb. Rightpropertygroup.com with an R, not a W. Do people still get that wrong?
No, the biggest thing they get wrong is the Right Property Group, but we'll take that as well.
Yeah, the Right Property Group. Right Property Group. All right, that's good, guys. We'll see you back again next month. What are we going to chat about? What do you reckon? Any ideas?
We'll see what's making news, I guess. What's the topic? But it'll probably be more of the same, but with a different flavour.
Okay, I like it. That's Steve Waters and Victor Kumar, directors of Right Property Group. Thanks for tuning in, everyone. This is Investing Insights with the Right Property Group. Hope you enjoyed it. There is well over 100 episodes we've been chatting about. I'm sure you can find one to be relevant for anything you're thinking about property investment right now, something you're unsure of, something you want to stress test, or just binge on being one of those educated investors. So you're out there building agile portfolios in good locations, preparing for the future. We'll see you again next time. Until then, bye-bye.
The information featured in this podcast is general in nature, does not take into consideration your financial situation or individual needs, and should not be relied upon. Before making any investment, insurance, tax, property, or financial planning decision, you should consult a licensed professional who can advise whether your decision is appropriate for you.